comes out and then it hits you with a pain. Things are great on the way out, nobody's with you when you're on the way down. You got what you wish for, is that what you're Welcome back to the Gods to Girls Volleyball Podcast with your host, Scott Bemke. Our podcast today features our fourth and final part of our four-part interview with Bob Vogelsang. Thanks so much for tuning in. Enjoy.
All right. What are your thoughts on the sport today and the rule changes to the short court rally scoring, Bogey?
Well, obviously it's a lot different than what we did. I was before my time. I should have played under those rules because that would have been a benefit to me. I mean, I wouldn't have to play in a marathon. It would be like a sprint. And let's see. I would have done all right in, I think, either rules. There's some I like, some I don't like. I don't like the I think anybody that serves a hit net should be automatically dead. Right off the bat, there's no, like, let's serve like in tennis. A lot of people don't like that. I mean, because that brings in luck. And that, I mean, there's luck in volleyball, but that's just blind luck, that type of stuff. So I don't think that's really necessary.
You're right.
I mean, that's kind of like, I don't like, see, basketball, look at the basketball now. The 3 points been in forever, and we're getting away from basketball. Wooden's rolling over in his grave because when I first came out, he kept shaking his head like, no. We tried so hard to work the ball in to make a layup. Now people are working from the end zone to the outside to take a long shot. So it's all just shooters. You know, that's not really, you know, anybody can really shoot, so to speak. Like Larry Costello in the old days of the two-hander, he'd be perfect for the days. He could get there at half court. In fact, why don't they have 4-point and 5-point lines if you want to get that ridiculous? Costello could have stayed at half court with two hands and probably still hit 30% for 5-pointers.
Right.
And now you gotta keep tradition in. If you keep changing things, then you gotta keep putting asterisks in all type of scenarios that happen in sports, and it gets a little bizarre.
Well, here's a hypothetical for you. In your prime, how would you do against a team like Dalhauser and Rogers? Playing old school rules, no blocking over, big court, side out scoring, no antennas.
Dalhauser Rogers or the fellow that he's playing with now?
Either or. Spalding ball, best 2 out of 3 to 11 or 1 to 15. Who would you pick as your partner?
Who would I pick?
And then what would your strategy be against them as a team?
All right. I would pick Ernie Suara. And let's say it's the player Dalhauser playing with now, Lucena. I think we would do very well against them, and I'll tell you why. I mean, can we bring in the jump serves? Probably not, because we got to go way back, right? The Beats has got quite a good jump serve, too. As a matter of fact, I think one reason he does have a great jump serve is he's the only one that really throws it up with the left hand and comes across with their right. I mean, I'm looking at all these people, and everybody's throwing it up with their right hand and hitting it with their right hand, which means you've really got to torque twice. You got to twist your body one way and then retwist it and come back the other way again, which you're kind of like fighting against yourself, where if you go this left hand and wind up with the big right all the way through, it's just like one big, long, strong motion. I don't know. It just made sense to me. Maybe a lot of people aren't ambidextrous enough to throw it up with one hand and hit it with the other, but it just made sense for me. So anyway, let's say we can't use that, just regular serves. Like I say, I think we do really well because first of all, I don't think they could keep up with this. I was never a grinder. But these guys aren't in shape like we were then. I mean, they don't play 2 out of 3 games in the old days. I remember when I played with Von Hagen for the very first time, and we ended up in the finals of the winners against, after we'd beaten Mingus and Lee, we'd play the finals of the winners, and it was, I think it was 3.5 hours for that one match, and I don't even think it went 2 out of 3. I think it was 2 straight we beat them, but I mean, it took all of us, all of the jazz away from us, and we played Mingus and Lee again, and then I cramped, so what are you going to do? But that's volleyball, but I think Dellhauser, I don't think would have lasted under the old rules. He couldn't block over, so he and I would be a split, you know. I had to go through all those years of not being able to block over, and even though Ernie and I, we blocked a lot, I would have loved to have seen Dellhauser go through what I went. Oh, Vogel, your fingernail was over. What do you mean? What? Which one? You know, it's just like, come on. I'll just block over. But, yeah, I think we match up well because I think they would, ball handling would be about even, setting side out would be all about even. I think we might serve a little tiny bit better, and defense, you know, from the big hit without a block, a little better. Remember, it's a bigger course. I think I would put money on us in that one.
Just like you did when you played Selznick in one-on-one.
Yeah, I mean, I would feel very confident in it, right? That's beside the point, you know. Who knows? You can't really distinguish. But, I mean, in my time, I was ahead of my time. I would have rather played the modern rules now. It would have been more beneficial for me. I would have a lot more wins because I would never cramp. And, you know, I probably cramped in more than half the finals. I mean, that's not an excuse. It's just if I knocked off the beer, I might not have cramped. Who knows?
In 1996, you were inducted into the California Beach Volleyball Association Hall of Fame. That's quite an accomplishment when you think of all the legendary and great players that are in there. Looking back on your career, what are you most proud of, and how would you like to be remembered, Bogey?
Well, let's see. Probably that I got in a lot of really good finals, played against a lot of good teams. Well, one example is, I don't think anybody's got this record. I had 5 decades of being AAA, in other words, the highest ranking for 5 decades, and the longest continuous in a row, I think, was 30-some years or so of being AAA in a row. I mean, years.
So what was that, the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s?
Yeah, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And I think it went into 2000, I think I was AA, so. Yeah, that's a long run.
Yeah, I'd say.
That, I would say that, and mainly it's the longevity of me being top player, but what's really amazing is when I went over to Australia to the tour, and then I went back again, and went on I didn't go back over again. I went originally on the tour, played originally for the first Nescafe over in Australia, did okay. Came back here, met a girl over there, and then invited her over here to California. She came out and enjoyed it. She went back, and then she calls me and said, would you want to get a job out here in Australia coaching basketball and volleyball? I said, yeah, that sounds great. I love Australia. So I ended up being able to get a green card, so to speak, and stay as long as I wanted. And I lived over there for 4 years, and she got me a bicycle. And my modus of operation, transportation was a bicycle all over town. So I'd ride my bike to school and back and coach and everything else. I got in the best shape of my life. Not to mention I was brewing my own beer, so I didn't have to spend any money on beer. And I got in my best shape of my life, and I think I was like the leading money winner, because they counted counted me as an Aussie. I could play in any of the type tournaments. So that was a big plus. But I think I was as good a shape then and played as well when I was 53, 54 than ever. I mean, a lot of these people, you know, oh, you got to retire at 35. You know, some sports you can go on forever, like volleyball, I think, maybe baseball. That was my best sport, believe it or not. I played football, basketball, volleyball, golf, you know, you name it. And probably my best sport was baseball. I never played it after high school. But that's that.
What do you miss most about your playing days, Vogie?
Let's see. What would I miss my playing days? I guess the camaraderie of going around different places, seeing different things, meeting old friends, different places. As far as like Australia, I'd love to go back and play. Like, well, I mean, too old to do it now, but I mean, I'd love to go back and revisit. Like maybe every couple of years, go back and live a whole year, 6 months here, 6 months there, like endless summer, so to speak. I mean, that would be fun to do, but you know, you only have so many years of life. So, but I mean, I loved it over there. Australia is a great place, and that's one of the things I miss here. I mean, you can still go down now. An unfortunate thing is you see these pictures of State Beach and Sherno Beach and Muscle Beach now. You go by there and there's nobody playing. I mean, there's, you know, it's like, it's almost like deserted. It's, I think everything's shifted and gone down south to Manhattan, Hermosa. But not, you know, unfortunate, but that's the way it was. We were the kingpin in the old days. Muscle, Sereno, and State were all the good players, quote, quote, unquote. And then everybody started going up to, or downtown, down south, so it became the big kingpin after that. But I think we started it up here in Santa Monica.
Those photos from that era are priceless. I can only imagine what it was like to actually there.
Yeah, the old Sereno Grill is the only one that really hit. Well, actually, State Beach, there was a little across the street from that is a little Irish place for breakfast. Arnold Schwarzenegger used to go in there. A lot of different people used to go in there. But they used to have a few little pictures of Selznick and a couple people that played volleyball in there, too. And then Sereno Grill, that was famous for a lot of things. And even Muscle Beach, if you go into the Big D and stuff like that, there's a lot of volleyball play. Wilt's pictures in there, myself and a couple other guys, Ernie and Butch playing a lot of pictures in there. But yeah, we had pictures, a little bit of camaraderie in our day of that.
When you were kings.
Yeah, we were the main show.
Showbiz.
That's what it was.
Got a couple questions now from various fans from the old school group. I'm going to go through these one at a time and get your answers for these, okay?
Sure.
Tell us about your basketball playing exploits for the Washington Generals against the Harlem Globetrotters and what that infamous play was that you pulled out there on Meadowlark Lemon.
Well, I was fortunate enough to be asked to do that. Actually, I was in the Final Four at Oregon State. I was one of the few players that played volleyball. I mean, not a few. There's actually five of us, I think it is, that were actually played in Final Fours and made Hall of Fame in volleyball. But playing over there in, actually all around the world, back in the day, that was 68-69. There's actually, Harlem Globetrotters had two traveling teams. One traveling team with Meadowlark Lemon and Curly, they went all around to Cleveland and Omaha and all the bigger cities around the United States. And the other group, we had Bobby Showboat Hall and Geese Osby, and Leon Hillard would show up once in a while and did dribble, and a lot of different players in that group. But we would go to Hawaii, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and a few of the smaller cities that started in the States, and Hawaii, I guess. We did a lot more traveling to different places. So I thought, yeah, I'd much rather do that. So we went on that tour. And then after those two tours are over, they had like an all-star team between the two groups. And then that group went over to Europe. So that was it. So now I'm traveling with Meadowlark and them. I guess so many different things that happened on that Globetrotter tour is fantastic. But one of the few things, I mean, as far as going around internationally and seeing different things, there was a zoo. I think it was either Melbourne, maybe Sydney, but it was a walk-in zoo. You could go in and pet the koalas and the wombats and everything else, but it was a fantastic zoo. But as far as some of the funny plays, I guess he's referring to one of them was they've gone around to the guys' teams and say, you know, hey, next Tuesday when we are playing up in, let's see, where it was, I think it was whatever little town it was in Europe. So we're just going to goof around and do whatever little stuff we want to do, you know, just to mess up the show or have fun with it. And Meadowlark Lemon, he's the type of a guy, he used to play, we played cards together, gamble and all the other table tennis players would play. But anyway, he didn't want to miss his card games, but so he'd always be buddy-buddy with me. I could do no wrong because I'd always guard him and stuff, so we were pretty tight. So I'm thinking, well, if we can goof off and stuff, why would we want to all do it at the same game? That wouldn't make sense. I mean, it wouldn't be very on the moment. So one time I invited about three different girls, you know, which I usually do every game, just to have fun and in an audience. So I figured, well, I'll show off of it this time. So what happened was, this was a particular play where Meadowlark puts the ball behind him, or behind me on the floor, and he points up, and then he points somewhere, and I'm supposed to walk over looking for it, and then he turns around and picks it up and dribbles in and makes a layup. Well, he put the ball down, and I turned my head, he turns his head and points. So anyway, then he turns around, and all of a sudden the ball's not there. I mean, I don't know exactly his expression, what went on after I picked the ball up and started going down the other way to jam it home. But anyway, after I did it, I figured that this is going to be funny, and I turned around, and everybody on this team were on the ground laughing. I mean, and they didn't want to do it because they knew if they laughed, he would really get pissed, you know, and go crazy. The fans went ballistic. They thought that was the greatest thing ever. See, he got messed up on his own show.
He got upstaged by Vogue.
Yeah, so upstaged by me, and now he's looking like the dunce, you know, and it's like, and the crowd is going nuts, and he's trying to look mad, but he can't, so he kind of shrugged. And then they went ballistic again. I was like, oh, that was great. You know, fans loved it. So I thought, oh, man, I'm never going to hear the end of this. And so sure enough, he comes up and he goes, I thought he's going to kick me off the team. He goes, you know what? Did you see the fans? I go, yeah, that was pretty fun. We got to do that again. I said, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, that was good. I said, but the thing is, I can't tell you when I'm going to do it, though, because then it's going to kill the action. So I'm just wondering if he's always looking around his back, if the ball's going to be there or not. But for that one thing, that really set him off. Another thing, I mean, I was always famous for bringing some really nice-looking girls to the games, and they're always pointing up, oh, there's some of Ogie's gals, right? You know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's easy to go around and say, hey, you want to go to the Globetrotter game? It's free. I'll give you free passes. I mean, that's no big thing. So this one time I'm down, I think, oh, this was in Italy, in the where they had the Olympics in Rome. And I went around, I'm downtown Rome, and I see a group of three girls that are just absolutely gorgeous. So I said, you girls, one, you know, a couple of them, one was French, and I mean, one was Swedish, and long story short, I said, you girls want to come? And yeah, we got some other friends. I said, are they anywhere as good looking as you? And they go, oh yeah, they're all better looking than us. And I went, yeah, right, okay. So I think I gave them like 10 tickets, right?
Right.
So we get up there, and all of us sitting up in the, there's a lineup of 11 girls that are like unbelievable looking. What happened was these girls were in the Miss Universe contest. I didn't know this, but they're all in the Miss Universe contest. So they're all at the game, and after the game, they all come up to me, and I'm like, God, look at what is this guy? What is this bull? Look at him. He's got all these girls. And what happened was there was a big taxi strike and bus strike going on in Rome that afternoon. So somehow, in other words, long story short, the girls are stranded right at the basketball auditorium there, but no way to get back to Rome. I mean, in the main part of where their hotel was. So I'm thinking, oh no, okay. Get on the bus, the guys will love it. I mean, now I'll really be the hero, you know, get on the bus. And mind you, we've got the traveling acts, you know, the couple of French girls that fold up into a carry-on bag, you know, contortionists and the gymnastic type people and Adagio, all that type of stuff. There'll be different type acts and the table tennis players. So anyway, they get on the bus. Everything is cool. Everybody says, all right, this is cool. Now all of a sudden, all the 7 owners of the Globetrotters come on the bus. So, and they come on, oh, look, whoa, did we have some new acts or something? And everybody's looking around and everybody turns and points to me. Ask him. You know, well, what's this deal? I said, well, hey, we are America's goodwill ambassadors, aren't we? Yeah, well, there's a strike and the girls can't get back. I invited all the girls here and now they can't get back. And I just said, get on the bus. We'll take you. I didn't know you guys were coming in. Well, what are you going to do now? I said, well, why don't you just let them sit on your lap? And their eyes lit up. Yeah, we could do that. So all these gals are sitting on the owner's laps. That was pretty good. And then what? There's a story that one of them ended up marrying Miss Sweden, who was my favorite. But anyway, at that time, but that's just rumored. I don't know if it really happened or not. But let's just hope it did. Any other, just millions of great stories on that Globetrotter tour. That was fantastic. I played against Wilt on it. That's where I first met Wilt. And, well, I didn't really meet him. We just played against each other. And I do all the dunking on our team because I would never miss a dunk. I would just go up and dunk it so they could hold the net and the ball would fall, you know, different type of scenarios from that. But this one time I got a breakaway and Wilt's down at the other end, and so I figured out. I went in and I threw a dunk shot right over his head, and he went, whoa, you know, people went nuts. Same story, a little bit later on, goes in, but these are the ones I'm not supposed to get, but I took advantage, so I'm coming down, I'm cuffing it like I'm really going to throw this one down. I go up, and I can see, he's, okay, you want to try this? So I go up there and start to jam it, and he just puts his big net up there, and we hit the net air above the net, I mean, above the rim. All of a sudden, I hear the... I think I heard every bone on my backbone crack, like, you know, when you crack your back.
Right.
And came down, and I never felt better in my life. I went, whoa, I feel really good now. But anyway, he blocked the heck out of it. He said, welcome.
Have some.
And and then I ran into him when he was playing with the Lakers, and long story short, played, taught him volleyball. We were partners all along, went on his trip. Yeah, we just became, I guess, through the years, became really, really good friends. Yeah. But, so I got that out of the tour. But, that was, and then when they had the wake for Wilt with all the Globetrotters coming, we got to see, I could see them all again. It was quite a good reunion.
Oh, I bet it was. Who cheated more at cards, you or Wilt?
Oh, that was just to show you the type of guy he was. He always cheated more, but it was an obvious cheat on his part. I mean, he played this old ladies, these two old ladies that were really, really good paddle tennis players, and they loved to play against Wilt because Wilt didn't have a great overhand, but he had good ground strokes. He was a good paddle tennis player, but these girls were champs. They loved to play against him, and he loved to play against them and beat them. And you know, a ball would be in, and he would call it out, and he'd, you know, this type of thing. And finally, I'd say, "No, well, that might have been in. Let's play that over." "No, Vogie, that ball was out." "Oh, okay. You know, I'm not going to argue with him." But and another good thing is he didn't like to lose against anybody. One time we had him over, and one of my little nieces was like 6 years old, and you know, the card game you threw on the floor and you try to match them up, and like remembrance games.
Right.
You turn one over and try to, and they're playing that. And she's beating them. And then she turns over one that everybody knew. I mean, it was out of my shoulder. I know she's going to remember that. And if she would have gotten that one, she would have won. So he goes, "Well, man, he gets his hand here and makes it. We got to start this over again. Wait a minute." And we all started, they didn't laugh. I laughed because I knew what was happening. He was afraid of losing to a six-year-old. But that's just the way he was. That was his mind. I mean, he did it. Yeah, he was amazing. In fact, the one time, what was fun is we used to like to play the card games against him. We'd never do it if it's for money, anything else, but we always cheated in cards. And people, how do they do it? I mean, a lot of times we slap I-5, like if you're supposed to pass cards to your partner. We do it, but our hands are so big, we kind of cuff and reshuffle and come back. And I remember Dale Rucco one time, he's looking at my hand. I send one thing, and I come back with another. And I give him the high five, then I come back with a third hand. He's going like, "What in the world is happening?" And he started telling people, like, "No, they didn't do that." Yeah, they did that. But we were good at it. I mean, we were accomplished. But as far as cheating in a game, I would never cheat in a volleyball game. I would try to bend the rules, but I would never cheat.
Which brings me to my next question from John Lee, greatest volleyball writer ever. He wants to know, did you ever, quote-unquote, forget to call a net on yourself?
Well, let's see. Can you keep a secret?
Of course.
So can I.
Stephen Kahn, I think they call him the Matza.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He wants to know about the time that you put a knife in the ball.
Oh, yeah, that good time. Hey, let's see, that happened at Santa Barbara. And it was a Masters tournament. I think Butch and I and Randy and I, a lot of guys from Muscle, I think I won like 95% of all the Masters tournaments. And I'm playing with Randy, we're playing really well. And I was also playing, actually they were short of a team in the, that's that very same tournament, they were short a team in the Open. And they needed one other player that was still AAA, even though I was 45-ish, I was still AAA. They needed one other AAA guy there to make it a legal AAA tournament. So we played in that too. And we ended up beating three straight AAA teams, and we got like a fifth, and then still was playing in the other. But anyway, my shoulder was so sore, we're playing in the finals of the men's Masters, and this is against Ralph Mink. I think his first name is Ralph Mink. Mink's last name. They're a good little team. But I don't know what it is about the Santa Barbara players, but they play with, and I think it was Mink's ball. And they said, "No, we got to play with this ball." I said, "Why don't we play with a court ball?" "No, no, we have to play with this ball." And I said, "What's not that windy, you know?" And I left and I said, "This ball is super heavy. This is ridiculous. Put three holes and I could bowl with this thing. You know, that's how bad it was." And, oh, man, and that's the same type. But a lot of people are hurting their shoulders because the balls were really getting out of hand, how heavy they were. You know, Roy Mingus for a while and a couple other players, you know.
That Mikasa suede spike?
Pardon that? What's that?
That was the Mikasa suede spike, I believe.
Yeah, that one was just ridiculous. But anyway, this ball was of the other gender, but I think it got hit in the ocean a few too many times. It was just way too heavy. So anyway, I'm thinking, oh God, I can't do this because it's killing me. So I go to my buddy Sig from Manhattan Beach. His wife's in the big van. They're always traveling to watch these things. I say, you don't have a little paring knife thing on you, do you? He said, yeah. You need to borrow it? Yeah, can I borrow it? Okay, so I take it and I go down to the... We start. I said, look, if we... We'll give you the... We're playing 1-2 out of 3. I said, look, I'll give you the... We'll give you the first game if we can just change balls. I'll concede the first game if we can just play with another ball. No, 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 we have to use that ball. So I figured, oh, let me try it. So I serve it for a couple of times, and I'm realizing, you know, this is not going to go 3 games. I mean, this is going to kill my shoulder. So I reach in down in the sand and pull out the knife that I had buried in case I wanted it. So I get back to do a huge sky ball. Because, you know, I figured, I guess I got to put a little extra oomph into it. So I bang up this huge sky ball. Perfect connection, I think. So it goes up way up high, and all of a sudden at this height, probably 30, 40 feet up there, it starts sliding down, you know, like a parachute. And even on about halfway down, Mink goes, oh, Foggy, you asshole! He realized, I guess, that I did something to the ball, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm watching this laughing so hard, I forgot to throw the knife away or get rid of the evidence, right? I mean, it is just funny, and I'm thinking, oh, they're not going to run anyway. So they kicked me out of the tournament. Oh, no, you can't do that. You can't. And there's supposed to be some really nice prizes, some men's clothing, and et cetera, et cetera. And so the guy running the tournament says, no, you can't come back next year. And you don't win any prizes, and you forfeit out of the tournament. You know, we'll give Randy my partner, his stuff, but you're not going to get anything. And you can't come back next year. Blah, 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 blah. Well, long story short, the guy that ran the tournament says, look, if you don't invite Vogie back next year, I won't sponsor it. Oh, all right, I guess we can come back next year. But he can't have any of his stuff, we said. He's
no paring knives allowed.
Yeah. So he tells me, he says, look, swing by my office at around 3:30, you know, about an hour and a half after the tournament. I'm going to be opening up and doing stuff. I'll give you some stuff. And I said, okay. So I ended up going back to his, he had a men's clothing stuff. He gave me about, no, I don't know how many different, I mean, you know, seconds that were not absolutely perfect that he could sell for absolutely perfect clothing. And you would never be able to find a flaw in them. He gave me, I don't know, 5 shirts, 5 pants, 5 shorts, you know, different color, whatever I wanted to pick it. So I ended up making out like a bandit instead of losing. I ended up, so to speak, winning, but everybody remembers the incident. And that's that story.
For the next question, it comes from Noble Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall a time that you were doing sit-ups on an incline board with Ron Von Hagen?
Well, that I don't remember. I remember we used to run the stairs down there at Santa Monica Canyon. Wilt and I used to take them 3 at a time. I do that, but I think he might have been referring to when Ronnie first asked me to play with him after 25 years of not or playing against him, and he said, "I'll play with you, Bogey, if you don't drink beer. I think we can beat Mingus and Lee." I said, "Well, I think so too, Ronnie." So I think it refers to where I was drinking a special brew and this tea and taking different special vitamins and, you know, all this kind of stuff, and actually made me feel pretty healthy, pretty good, and I didn't, you know, that first day I felt like on fire. I eventually cramped second day at the end of, you know, another long thing, but I got into the health aspect of it with Von Hagen. I think that's probably what he's referring to. I don't remember an incline board, but...
Speaking of beers, what's the most you ever drank during a tournament?
I never really got, so to speak, what you would call high or drunk or anything like that. Just drunk as much as I wanted to, needed, quote unquote, which you never really need. But I remember one incident sticks out to me is a little bit different was, again, in another Santa Barbara Masters, it was sponsored by a beer company, O'Doul's, which I didn't know at the time was a non-alcoholic beer. I go, this is great. I get free beers. I get to play in the tournament, win, get prizes. Oh, my God, this is perfect. See all my buddies. Well, I'm drinking beer, running up and down by and getting a hot dog or something to eat. And firing through these beers, and I'm going, God, I'm not even getting tired. The beers, and I'm not even, my muscles aren't getting sore. And it was like, wow, this is really good beer. It wasn't until after that tournament, or not after the tournament, late in the afternoon, it was like, yeah, blah, 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 blah. And I told him, I'd be, yeah, this must be really light. Is that a light beer or something? I'm not even getting really even a semi-buzz or anything. And the guy goes, no, it's non-alcoholic beer. I go, oh, well, no wonder it made me feel so good in a good way. Because it didn't, when you run out of, it didn't dehydrate you. That kind of hydrated you and stayed there, yeah.
Eileen Clancy McClintock wants you to refresh our memory about the drive to El Paso.
Good old Eileen. Well, she comes into that story a couple of times. I remember I was playing with her in a mixed. Butch couldn't make it. She said, Boogie, Butch, you and I play in this mix, and we're doing pretty good on Saturday. And Michael Harris shows up. And he says, hey, Bo, hey, there you are. I said, hey, Michael, how you been, buddy? Blah, 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 blah. And he says, can you do me a big favor? I said, what's that? So we need one more good name, good player to play exhibition match for FIVB, you know, not FIVB, whatever.
The IVA?
IVA, I mean, yeah. So we'll give you a jacket for IVA, and we'll pay you a little bit, you know, we need another body, just blah, 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 blah. I go, sure, I'll do that for sure. I'd like to do that, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So we go down and they kind of stack the teams, obviously. Yeah, make it more. But YVA, that was when you would have four guys and two gals playing on the team. Regular six men, but you'd install two gals in whatever position you want them to play. I mean, there's not going to be that many girls that would hit. But so we're playing the exhibition, and I'm obviously an outside hitter, and you get to back to where I'm serving, and all of a sudden the crowd goes, jump serve, Vogie, jump serve, which they did a lot of times when I'm playing on the beach. So I'm thinking, well, I don't do it that much indoors, or I hardly ever play much indoors anymore, but what the heck. So I go back and I uncork a real good jump serve, and Bill Wardrop jumps out of the way and hits Mary Jo Pepler right in the right in the face, bam.
You gave her a leather sandwich?
Yes, sir. And crowd goes kind of nuts, and I do it again, and for some reason, Rudy jumps out of the way and hits another girl. And so now it's just like, oh, this is overpowering serve, and the crowd's going nuts. And so I think I made a run of 4 or 5 points, a couple of blocks to get, you know, they blocked them down. But the crowd enjoyed that little atmosphere. And long story short, I played pretty good. I mean, I hit well against a good team, and I blocked well and served well. And a little later on, they had a draft for the pro volleyball, and the guy made me from Texas El Paso, Vandenberg, I think. I'm not really sure of his name. Nice guy. But they made me the number one draft choice. And everybody's going, like, God, Vogie doesn't even play. All these guys are All-American indoors and this and that, and Vogie gets drafted number one. That's ridiculous. He doesn't even play indoors, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then everybody asks him, like, so why would you draft Vogie number one? I mean, look at so many guys out there. And he goes, did you see the fans? Who did they want? Who did they like? Who were they behind?
Jump serve Vogie.
Yeah, well, that's because he was jump serving and going crazy and blah, blah, blah. Well, there you go. You know, so when I got drafted, and I remember reading the paper at El Paso and the jump server, and that's why I think I still had a little bit of a beard going then. I'm not really sure. I can't remember. But, yeah, that's that's that. So I got a little bit of money to be the first draft choice. And I mentioned, like, well, why don't you, let me talk, and I says, do you only get girls? I said, well, Eileen Clancy, the girl I was playing with at the beach, why don't you get her? She can dig like mad. She's really good. Really? Hell yeah. So they ended up taking her. And so we just drove up there together, all the way to El Paso, which wasn't as far as I thought it would be. It didn't take as long as I thought it would take.
Good story.
But it was a good trip. Yeah.
Remember Bob Hurwitz?
So, of course.
I've seen some pictures of him. He looked like he could bring the heat. He wants to know what you did with his beach chair. He's still looking for it.
Oh, my God. His beach chair. I don't even think I could ever... That thing was so low to the ground, I could never get in and out of it anyway. I don't know what ever happened to his beach chair. Tell him I'm sorry, but I don't have it.
Fair enough.
I just don't have it. I hardly ever use beach chairs. Because most of the time I was playing.
Earl Koppelman told me the story about after one day being down at State or Sereno, he went up to a liquor store somewhere there in Santa Monica and ran into your roommate there who was working at the checkout counter at the liquor store. And the roommate told Earl that when they came home recently, you had rearranged the whole apartment and never told them. What's up with that story? And was that the infamous Captain Jack Adrians that was your roommate that you did that to?
He wasn't really my roommate because I never really had a room, and I had a little small one bedroom on the beach in Santa Monica that I lived there for 17-18 years till I got married, and I paid $95 a month. And some, if I did any work on my place and fix it up a little bit, he'd say, oh, don't even worry about paying paying rent. And then if I did any work on his place, he'd say, well, thanks. You don't owe me any money. Okay. So, I mean, I had the greatest thing, arrangement in the world there. He was a dentist, Dr. Slagerman. But, so anyway, and I got... The little garage is right on the highway there, a little small, probably 15 by 20 deep, right on the highway with two entrances, one from the open up to put a car in, but it was never opened, and there's a little, like a regular walk-in door on the side of it, but I would just use it for storage. I had a whole bunch of stuff in there, so it really wasn't that I rearranged it. But he was looking for a place to stay, and I said, well, why don't you stay in the garage? It's got one electric outlet in there, and you can throw a lot of different stuff on it. And you got a couple of couches, you got this, and so I threw around a bunch of stuff and made it livable. I had another old TV in there, whatever, so I just let him have that for like $40 a month or something ridiculous. So I didn't really rearrange it. I guess I did rearrange it, but I just made it livable for him, so to speak.
Some of that just, set it up all nice, Vogue style for him.
Yeah, so to speak. Yeah, it wasn't bad. It was as good as could be. Better than nothing. So better than being homeless, right?
Yeah, and he was the guy that had a savant-like memory as far as being able to remember specific plays from specific tournaments just about any year back then. Is that correct?
Well, I take a lot of credit for that because I told him all the things that have happened before. So, but he remembers a lot very well, and as do I. So, I mean, some of the things that he never saw, he goes on what I said as far as past history. You got to remember, I played in all those five decades of different. You say, well, who was the best in that decade? Who was the best in that decade? So, a lot of times, mind you, all these tournaments. When the first started out, there wasn't many. There was four tournaments a year, and then eight, and then 12, and, it kept escalating. I mean, when you were 30 years old, when I was 30 years old, 35-ish years old, I could probably play in an open tournament three different open tournaments in three different states, I mean cities, in one weekend. So there was so much more going on that there were a lot of tournaments. What was the point I was trying to get?
About Captain Jack and his recollection. Oh. Like Chris Marlowe called him the human encyclopedia of the sport, and when he passed away, unfortunately all that knowledge goes along with him. So
yeah. Another thing, the reason it's hard to win a lot of tournaments is sometimes I'd play with a decent partner, but I'd have to beat Von Hagen and Lang, and if I beat them, then I'd have to beat O'Hara Bright. You know, and vice versa. Then go through those two and then face Rundle Bergman, and then if you go through them, you know, other eras have to beat Mingus and Lee. So there was always a lot of, if you got up in the top four, you were doing something in every tournament, let's just put it that way. But there was a lot of competition back then, and even now, I mean, it's always the cream of the crop always rises,
right,
in every era, so to speak.
And for my final question today, Vogie, what are you up to these days as far as occupation, family, hobbies? You're retired. How are you keeping yourself busy?
I'm semi-retired, but I'll still do a little carpentry and painting for somebody who's a friend or some small time. A little bit of this. I'm also coaching volleyball for Beach Cities once in a while. The 12 and under girls. I like doing that. I don't know why he has me coaching second or third group in the 12 and under group, because I get them really good when they're like 10 and 11, and then they go up to his team, which is 12 gold, number one team on the Beach Cities roster. So he did it right. I mean, probably my best coaching would be pros, I would think, girls or whatever. Like, another thing I find I accomplished, I was one of the first pro coaches in volleyball, because in those days, if you wanted to coach an AVP player, you had to pay $200, where the player would have to, you know, pay your way to coach him. I don't know on that. But anyway, I remember Brian Gaskey asked me to coach him because I helped him one time to beat his own countryman in Canada in a Canadian tournament. He says, why don't you just coach me? He says, I can't really afford to pay you, but I'll pay your way to the tournaments and buy you dinner and everything else if you're not doing anything on those weekends. I said, yeah, that's fun. I like doing stuff like that. So I started doing that, and he went from number 48 ranked to number 3 ranked, and they ended up beating Karch and whoever his partner was, Steffes, I think, twice in one tournament. So he ended up taking, I think, that year he had like 2 seconds and 2/3. And then he said, you know, I'm going to have to pay you. This is not fair. I didn't realize I'd be doing this good. So I felt good about him doing really well through that, plus me making some money. So that was one good thing I got out of it. But I wouldn't mind doing that again. I'm looking to maybe try to get back into coaching college girls' teams. I think I do better with the girls than the guys. Right now, I think girls are playing almost as good as some of the mediocre men's AA team. In other words, the blocking is about as good as it was then. The cat and mouse game at the net is the same. I mean, these girls are getting so good. And some of the little girls that I'm coaching, I can see they would be really good beach players in the future. But that's what I want to do, is maybe coach on a college level. That, still looking into that. I've got my feelers out for Loyola, which is right down the street from here, that he said something like that, or you never know. But that would be fun to do again.
And then what, you do karaoke from time to time, right?
Oh, yeah. About once, maybe 3 times a month, something like that.
You have a foul?
Not as much as you used to, but actually, that's a sad story about that. you know, everybody's now, well, of course, when you get older, like my age now, that's what everybody talks about is, you know, Joe died, Bill died, Jim died, and what? I mean, that's all people talk about is the old people, their friends that died. Well, there was one old Spanish guy that I used to sing with, and there were two English brothers. And we all ended up going around to the same breakfast place. So sometimes I'd drive one of them or two of them, then they all met each other. The brothers obviously knew each other, but all of them were singers. And then the group of us would go up there, either I would pick up two and two would meet us, whatever. We were kind of once in a while all get together sometimes. But I remember within a 4 month span, all three of them died. Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's...
I'm going, what? And I remember when one of the older brothers, their son came over, because the other brother was still alive, and so I all went down to Poncho's down in Manhattan Beach, where I liked to sing the most, and kind of did a tribute to Eric when he's all the songs that he used to sing and stuff like that. And it was fun and was well-reserved. And actually, his son was a pretty good singer from living in England. He came over and he was a good singer. So it's all in the family. But, yeah, that's... So since then, I've had to hold off a little bit and get back into it and get my gusto up. But I went out the other night and had a good time. So I'm back into it again. I'm ready.
And last but not least, you mentioned earlier you played in five decades. If you had to say who the best player was from each decade, are you up for that?
Let's see, the best player?
50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and then the
2000s. There's always three or four that stand out. I mean, there's always, then they trade off beating each other. So, you know, and there's matchups sometimes. Well, that guy beat me more than I beat him. But then again, I beat the guy that he beat, so it's like that. But yeah, I guess the 50s, I guess it would be probably O'Hara and Selznick.
Okay.
The 60s would be Lang, Van Hagen. 70s, see, when did the Mingus and Leaf play? I mean, then Rundle
and Bergman were in the...
Well, I mean, I always thought that Bergman was overrated. I could always beat Bergman.
Of course you could.
Yeah. Let's see, Rundle, and then you got your Mingus and Lee, the other ones, I guess, in the 2000s. Who do we have? We'd have the Beast and somebody, or, you know, it just keeps escalating up to...
What about the 80s?
I'm trying to think. I'm so scattered, I can't remember who's... Oh, in the 80s, you know, I wasn't around much in the... I got married... Yeah, I was. I got married in 78. I came back here in, like, 82. So I guess... Living in South Carolina, so I missed a lot of tournaments then. In the 80s, when I came back, I guess it was still... Who was one of you?
Stokoe, Smith, Hovland.
Oh,
probably.
That's the era that, yeah. Well, now here's a funny thing. Stokoe and Smith couldn't beat Vandeweghe and I.
Yeah, you told me that. That was pretty surprising to hear.
But here's another one. When I was down under in Australia, they were setting up for a tournament in Sydney on Bondi Beach. And what was that guy's name from Brazil? He was running the, setting it up. I think he used to play indoors for SC. He had Celso. That's it, Celso. And Sinjin, they knew each other. So Andre, one of the guys from Brazil, cute little guy. And I said, hey, Andre, why don't you and I play Sinjin and Celso? Yeah, okay. You know, they just got the court set up. So we're out there playing, and Andre and I beat Sinjin and Celso. Mind you, this is when I'd just been traveling up and down the coast in Australia, giving clinics, and we'd have a little tournament, which hardly any good players would play in, so naturally I'd win that with a kid that I coached in high school, who ended up being one of the beach players for Australia down the road, John Cuff. So we'd win, you know, $150 or $200, whatever, every day, wherever we played, little beach here and that. But I got in such good shape after 3 weeks of that travel, and I'd just gotten back. So I'm playing pretty good volleyball, and so now Andre's partner, they're the number one team, Brazil, shows up, and I say, hey, why don't Andre and I play Senjin, you and no, I want to play with my partner, Andre, and then we'll play you and Senjin. Senjin looks at me, and I look at Senjin. Senjin, oh, God, I got to play with Vogue. You got to be good. Anyway, so we end up, okay, whatever. So all of a sudden, now I got to play left side because Senjin plays right. But I was always a good left sider anyway. So we're playing him, and we're just beating the hell out of him. I think we ended up beating him like 15-5. And there's nodded, God, you guys are so good, you're so good. And Senjin's going, Boogie, what's happened to you? You've never been this good before. I said, well, I'm playing left side, but I'm in shape, Senjin, I'm playing good. You know, and he goes, my God, I don't believe it. But that was one time, Senjin never complimented me, so I must have really been in good shape.
Right.
Because he always used to rag on me, but he doesn't remember when I used to carry him off the court one, when he's in his diapers, when his dad was playing cards and didn't have time to come get him. And I was only 18, kicking him off the tournament. I mean, kicking him off the court or whatever it was.
Good times.
Yeah, those were the good times.
This concludes our fourth and final part of our interview with Bob Vogelsang. Thanks for tuning in for it. As a reminder, please make sure to visit our website, godstoghosts.com, for more podcasts, video interviews, photos, and various documents that commemorate the history of the sport of volleyball. Thank you so much.